He nodded to one of his companions. Then he scanned the room, searching for... her. His eyes locked on Vin.
It's time.
Vin frowned. Time for what? The Ministry's Canton of Finance was an imposing structure. But then everything about the Steel Ministry tended to be imposing. Tall and blocky, the building had a massive rose window in the front, though the glass was dark from the outside. Two large banners hung down beside the window, the soot-stained red cloth proclaiming praises to the Lord Ruler. Cayman studied the building with a critical eye. Vin could sense his apprehension. The Canton of Finance was hardly the most threatening of ministry offices. The Canton of Inquisition, or even the Canton of Orthodoxy, had a far more ominous reputation. However, voluntarily entering any ministry office, putting yourself in the power of the obligators? Well, it was a thing to do only after serious consideration. Cayman took a deep breath, then strode forward, his dueling cane tapping against the stones as he walked. He wore his rich nobleman's suit, and he was accompanied by a half-dozen crew members, including Vin, to act as his servants. Vin followed Cayman up the steps, then waited as one of the crew members jumped forward to pull the door open for his master. Of the six attendants, only Vin seems to have been told nothing of Cayman's plan. Suspiciously, Theron, Cayman's supposed partner in the ministry scam, was nowhere to be seen. Vin entered the Canton building. Vibrant red light, sparkled with lines of blue, fell from the rose window. A single obligator, with mid-level tattoos around his eyes, sat behind a desk at the end of the extended entryway. Cayman approached, his cane thumping against the carpet as he walked.
"I am Lord Jadoo," he said.
"What are you doing, Cayman?" Vin thought. "You insisted to Theron that you wouldn't meet with Prelin Laird in his Canton office. Yet now you're here." The obligator nodded, making a notation in his ledger. He waved to the side.
"You may take one attendant with you into the waiting chamber. The rest must remain here."
Cayman's huff of disdain indicated what he thought of that prohibition. The obligator, however, didn't look up from his ledger. Cayman stood for a moment, and Vin couldn't tell if he was genuinely angry or just playing the part of an arrogant nobleman. Finally, he jabbed a finger at Vin.
"Come," he said, turning and waddling toward the indicated door.
The room beyond was lavish and plush, and several noblemen lounged in various postures of waiting. Cayman chose a chair and settled into it, then pointed toward a table set with wine and red frosted cakes. Vin obediently fetched him a glass of wine and a plate of food, ignoring her own hunger. Cayman began to pick hungrily at the cakes, smacking quietly as he ate. He's nervous, more nervous even than before.
"Once we get in, you will say nothing," Cayman grumbled between bites.
"You're betraying Theron," Vin whispered. Cayman nodded. "But how? Why?" Theron's plan was complex in execution, but simple in concept. Every year, the Ministry transferred its new acolyte obligators from a northern training facility south to Luthadel for final instruction. Theron had discovered, however, that those acolytes and their overseers brought down with them large amounts of Ministry funds, disguised as baggage, to be strongholded in Luthadel. Banditry was very difficult in the Final Empire, what with the constant patrols along canal routes. However, if one were running the very canal boats that the acolytes were sailing upon, a robbery could become possible. Arranged at just the right time, the guards turning on their passengers, a man could make quite a profit, then blame it all on banditry.
"Theron's crew is weak," Cayman said quietly. "He expended too many resources on this job."
"But the return he'll make," Vin said.
"Will never happen if I take what I can now, then run," Cayman said, smiling. I'll talk the obligators into a down payment to get my caravan boats afloat, then disappear and leave Theron to deal with the disaster when the Ministry realizes that it's been scammed."
Vin stood back, slightly shocked. Setting up a scam like this would have cost Theron thousands upon thousands of boxings. If the deal fell through now, he would be ruined, and with the Ministry hunting him, he wouldn't even have time to seek revenge. Cayman would make a quick profit as well as rid himself of one of his more powerful rivals. Theron was a fool to bring Cayman into this, she thought. But then the amount Theron had promised to pay Cayman was great. He probably assumed that Cayman's greed would keep him honest until Theron himself could pull a double cross. Cayman had simply worked faster than anyone, even Vin, had expected. How could Theron have known that Cayman would undermine the job itself rather than wait and try and steal the entire haul from the caravan boats? Vin's stomach twisted.
It's just another betrayal, she thought sickly. Why does it still bother me so? Everyone betrays everyone else. That's the way life is.
She wanted to find a corner, some place cramped and secluded, and hide. Alone.
Anyone will betray you. Anyone.
But there was no place to go. Eventually, a minor obligator entered and called for Lord Jadu. Vin followed Cayman as they were ushered into an audience chamber. The man who waited inside, sitting behind the audience desk, was not Prelin Laird. Cayman paused in the doorway. The room was austere, bearing only the desk and simple gray carpeting. The stone walls were unadorned, the only window barely a hand span wide. The obligator who waited for them had some of the most intricate tattoos around his eyes that Vin had ever seen. She wasn't even certain what rank they implied, but they extended all the way back to the obligator's ears and up over his forehead.
"Lord Jadu," the strange obligator said.
Like Laird, he wore gray robes, but he was very different from the stern, bureaucratic men Cayman had dealt with before. This man was lean in a muscular way, and his clean-shaven, triangular head gave him an almost predatory look.
"I was under the impression that I would be meeting with Prelin Laird," Cayman said, still not moving into the room. "Prelin Laird has been called away on other business. I am High Prelin Ariev, head of the board that was reviewing your proposal. You have a rare opportunity to address me directly. I normally don't hear cases in person, but Laird's absence has made it necessary for me to share in some of his work."
Vin's instincts made her tense. We should go. Now. Cayman stood for a long moment, and Vin could see him considering. Run now? Or take a risk for the greater prize? Vin didn't care about prizes, she just wanted to live. Cayman, however, had not become crew leader without the occasional gamble. He slowly moved into the room, eyes cautious as he took the seat opposite the obligator.
"Well, High Prelin Ariev,"
Cayman said with a careful voice,
"I assume that since I have been called back for another appointment, the board is considering my offer?"
"Indeed we are," the obligator said, "though I must admit there are some council members who are apprehensive about dealing with a family that is so near to economic disaster. The Ministry generally prefers to be conservative in its financial operations."
"I see.
But," Ariev said, "there are others on the board who are quite eager to take advantage of the savings you offered us."
"And with which group do you identify, Your Grace?"
"I, as of yet, have not made my decision."
The obligator leaned forward.
"Which is why I noted that you have a rare opportunity. Convince me, Lord Jadu, and you will have your contract."
"Surely Prelin Laird outlined the details of our offer," Cayman said.
"Yes, but I would like to hear the arguments from you personally. Humor me."
Vin frowned. She remained near the back of the room, standing near the door, still half convinced she should run.
"Well?" Aryev asked. "We need this contract, Your Grace," Kamen said. "Without it, we won't be able to continue our canal shipping operations. Your contract would give us a much-needed period of stability, a chance to maintain our caravan boats for a time while we search for other contracts."
Aryev studied Kamen for a moment.
"Surely you can do better than that, Lord Jadu. Laird said that you were very persuasive. Let me hear you prove that you deserve our patronage."
Vin prepared her luck. She could make Aryev more inclined to believe, but something restrained her. The situation felt wrong.
"We are your best choice, Your Grace," Kamen said. "You fear that my house will suffer economic failure? Well, if it does, what have you lost? At worst, my narrow boats would stop running, and you would have to find other merchants to deal with. Yet if your patronage is enough to maintain my house, then you have found yourself an enviable long-term contract."
"I see," Aryev said lightly. "And why the ministry? Why not make your deal with someone else? Surely there are other options for your boats, other groups who would jump at such rates." Kamen frowned.
"This isn't about money, Your Grace. It is about the victory, the showing of confidence that we would gain by having a ministry contract. If you trust us, others will too. I need your support."
Kamen was sweating now. He was probably beginning to regret this gamble. Had he been betrayed? Was Theron behind the odd meeting? The obligator waited quietly. He could destroy them, Vin knew. If he even suspected that they were scamming him, he could give them over to the Canton of Inquisition. More than one nobleman had entered a Canton building and never returned. Gritting her teeth, Vin reached out and used her luck on the obligator, making him less suspicious. Aryev smiled.
"Well, you have convinced me," he suddenly declared.
Kamen sighed in relief.
Aryev continued, "Your most recent letter suggested that you need 3,000 boxings as an advance to refurbish your equipment and resume shipping operations. See the scribe in the main hallway to finish the paperwork so that you may requisition the necessary funds."
The obligator pulled a sheet of thick bureaucratic paper from a stack, then stamped a seal at the bottom. He proffered it to Kamen.
"Your contract."
Kamen smiled deeply.
"I knew coming to the ministry was the wise choice," he said, accepting the contract.
He stood, nodding respectfully to the obligator, then motioned for Vin to open the door for him. She did so. "Something is wrong. Something is very wrong." She paused as Kamen left, looking back at the obligator. He was still smiling. A happy obligator was always a bad sign. Yet no one stopped them as they passed through the waiting room with its noble occupants. Kamen sealed and delivered the contract to the appropriate scribe, and no soldiers appeared to arrest them. The scribe pulled out a small chest filled with coins and then handed it to Kamen with an indifferent hand. Then they simply left the Canton building, Kamen gathering his other attendants with obvious relief. No cries of alarm, no tromping of soldiers. They were free. Kamen had successfully scammed both the ministry and another crew leader. Apparently. Kelsier stuffed another one of the little red-frosted cakes into his mouth, chewing with satisfaction. The fat thief and his scrawny attendant passed through the waiting room, entering the entryway beyond. The obligator who had interviewed the two thieves remained in his office, apparently awaiting his next appointment.
"Well?" Doxson asked. "What do you think?"
Kelsier glanced at the cakes.
"They're quite good," he said, taking another one. "The ministry has always had excellent taste.
It makes sense that they would provide superior snacks. Doxon rolled his eyes.
About the girl, Kel.
Kelsier smiled as he piled four of the cakes in his hand, then nodded toward the doorway. The Canton waiting room was growing too busy for the discussion of delicate matters. On the way out, he paused and told the obligator secretary in the corner that they needed to reschedule. Then the two crossed through the entry chamber, passing the overweight crew leader who stood speaking with a scribe. Kelsier stepped out onto the street, pulled his hood up against the still falling ash, then led the way across the street. He paused beside an alleyway, standing where he and Doxon could watch the Canton building's doors. Kelsier munched contentedly on his cakes.
"How did you find out about her?" he asked between bites.
"Your brother," Doxon replied. "Cayman tried to swindle Marsh a few months ago, and he brought the girl with him then, too. Actually, Cayman's little good luck charm is becoming moderately famous in the right circles. I'm still not sure if he knows what she is or not. You know how superstitious thieves can get."
Kelsier nodded, dusting off his hands. "How'd you know she'd be here today?" Doxon shrugged.
"A few bribes in the right place. I've been keeping an eye on the girl ever since Marsh pointed her out to me. I wanted to give you an opportunity to see her work for yourself."
Across the street, the Canton building's door finally opened, and Cayman made his way down the steps, surrounded by a group of servants. The small, short-haired girl was with him. The sight of her made Kelsier frown. She had a nervous anxiety to her step, and she jumped slightly whenever someone made a quick move. The right side of her face was still slightly discolored from a partially healed bruise. Kelsier eyed the self-important Cayman. "I'll have to come up with something particularly suitable to do to that man."
"Poor thing," Doxon muttered.
Kelsier nodded. "She'll be free of him soon enough. It's a wonder no one discovered her before this."
"Your brother was right, then?"
Kelsier nodded. "She's at least a misting, and if Marsh says she's more, I'm inclined to believe him. I'm a bit surprised to see her using allomancy on a member of the Ministry, especially inside a Canton building. I'd guess that she doesn't know that she's even using her abilities."
"Is that possible?" Doxon asked.
Kelsier nodded. "Trace minerals in the water can be burned, if just for a tiny bit of power. That's one of the reasons the Lord Ruler built his city here. Lots of metals in the ground. I'd say that..." Kelsier trailed off, frowning slightly. Something was wrong. He glanced toward Cayman and his crew. They were still visible in the near distance, crossing the street and heading south. A figure appeared in the Canton building's doorway. Lean, with a confident air, he bore the tattoos of a high prelin of the Canton of Finance around his eyes. Probably the very man Cayman had met with shortly before. The obligator stepped out of the building, and a second man exited behind him. Beside Kelsier, Doxon suddenly grew stiff. The second man was tall, with a strong build. As he turned, Kelsier was able to see that a thick metal spike had been pounded tip-first through each of the man's eyes. With shafts as wide as an eye socket, the nail-like spikes were long enough that their sharp points jutted out about an inch from the back of the man's clean-shaven skull. The flat spike ends shone like two silvery discs, sticking out of the sockets in the front where the eyes should have been. A steel inquisitor.
"What's that doing here?" Doxon asked.
"Stay calm," Kelsier said, trying to force himself to do the same. The inquisitor looked toward them, spiked eyes regarding Kelsier, before turning in the direction that Cayman and the girl had gone. Like all inquisitors, he wore intricate eye tattoos, mostly black with one stark red line, that marked him as a high-ranking member of the Canton of Inquisition. "He's not here for us," Kelsier said. "I'm not burning anything. He'll think that we're just ordinary noblemen."
"The girl," Doxon said.
Kelsier nodded.
You say Cayman's been running this scam on the Ministry for a while? Well, the girl must have been detected by one of the obligators. They're trained to recognize when an allomancer tampers with their emotions. Doxson frowned thoughtfully. Across the street, the Inquisitor conferred with the other obligator. Then the two of them turned to walk in the direction that Cayman had gone. There was no urgency to their pace.
They must have sent a tail to follow them, Doxson said.
This is the Ministry, Kelsier said. There'll be two tails, at least. Doxson nodded.
Cayman will lead them directly back to his safe house. Dozens of men will die. They're not all the most admirable people, but...
They fight the final empire in their own way, Kelsier said. Besides, I'm not about to let a possible Mistborn slip away from us. I want to talk to that girl. Can you deal with those tails?
I said I'd become boring, Kel, Doxson said. Not sloppy. I can handle a couple of Ministry flunkies.
Good, Kelsier said, reaching into his cloak pocket and pulling out a small vial. A collection of metal flakes floated in an alcohol solution within. Iron, steel, tin, pewter, copper, bronze, zinc, and brass. The 8 basic allomantic metals. Kelsier pulled off the stopper and downed the contents in a single swift gulp. He pocketed the now empty vial, wiping his mouth. I'll handle that Inquisitor. Doxson looked apprehensive.
You're going to try and take him?
Kelsier shook his head. Too dangerous. I'll just divert him. Now get going. We don't want those tails finding the safe house. Doxson nodded.
Meet me back at the 15th crossroad, he said, before taking off down the alley and disappearing around a corner.
Kelsier gave his friend a count of 10 before reaching within himself and burning his metals. His body came awash with strength, clarity, and power. Kelsier smiled. Then, burning zinc, he reached out and yanked firmly on the Inquisitor's emotions. The creature froze in place, then spun, looking back toward the Canton building.
Let's have a chase now, you and I, Kelsier thought.
We arrived in Terrace earlier this week, and I have to say, I find the countryside beautiful. The great mountains to the north, with their bald snow caps and forested mantles, stand like watchful gods over this land of green fertility. My own lands to the south are mostly flat. I think that they might look less dreary if there were a few mountains to vary the terrain. The people here are mostly herdsmen, though timber harvesters and farmers are not uncommon. It is a pastoral land, certainly. It seems odd that a place so remarkably agrarian could have produced the prophecies and theologies upon which the entire world now relies.
3. Cayman counted his coins, dropping the golden boxings one by one into the small chest on his table. He still looked a bit stunned, as well he should have. 3,000 boxings was a fabulous amount of money, far more than Cayman would earn in even a very good year. His closest cronies sat at the table with him, ale and laughter flowing freely. Vin sat in her corner, trying to understand her feelings of dread. 3,000 boxings. The Ministry should never have let such a sum go so quickly. Perlin Aryev had seemed too cunning to be fooled with ease. Cayman dropped another coin into the chest. Vin couldn't decide if he was being foolish or clever by making such a display of wealth. Underworld crews worked under a strict agreement. Everyone received a cut of earnings in proportion to their status in the group. While it was sometimes tempting to kill the crew leader and take his money for yourself, a successful leader created more wealth for everyone. Kill him prematurely and you would cut off future earnings, not to mention earn the wrath of the other crew members. Still, 3,000 boxings. That would be enough to tempt even the most logical thief. It was all wrong.
I have to get out of here, Vin decided. Get away from Cayman and the lair, in case something happens.
And yet, leave? By herself? She'd never been alone before. She'd always had Reen. He'd been the one to lead her from city to city, joining different thieving crews. She loved solitude, but the thought of being by herself out in the city horrified her. That was why she'd never run away from Reen. That was why she'd stayed with Cayman. She couldn't go, but she had to. She looked up from her corner, scanning the room. There weren't many people in the crew for whom she felt any sort of attachment. Yet there were a couple that she would be sorry to see hurt should the obligators actually move against the crew. A few men who hadn't tried to abuse her, or, in very rare cases, who had actually shown her some measure of kindness. Yulef was at the top of that list. He wasn't a friend, but he was the closest thing she had now that Reen was gone. If he would go with her, then at least she wouldn't be alone. Cautiously, Vin stood and moved along the side of the room to where Yulef sat drinking with some of the other younger crew members. She tugged on Yulef's sleeve. He turned toward her, only slightly drunk.
Vin?
Yulef, she whispered. We need to go. He frowned.
Go? Go where?
Away, Vin whispered. Out of here.
Now?
Vin nodded urgently. Yulef glanced back at his friends, who were chuckling among themselves, shooting suggestive looks at Vin and Yulef. Yulef flushed.
You want to go somewhere, just you and I?
Not like that, Vin said. Just, I need to leave the lair, and I don't want to be alone. Yulef frowned. He leaned closer, a slight stink of ale on his breath.
What is this about, Vin? He asked quietly.
Vin paused.
I think something might happen, Yulef, she whispered. Something with the obligators. I just don't want to be in the lair right now.
Yulef sat quietly for a moment.
All right, he finally said. How long will this take?
I don't know, Vin said. Until evening, at least. But we have to go.
Now.
He nodded slowly.
Wait here for a moment,
Vin whispered, turning. She shot a glance at Cayman, who was laughing at one of his own jokes. Then she quietly moved through the ash-stained, smoky chamber into the lair's back room. The crew's general sleeping quarters consisted of a simple, elongated corridor lined with bedrolls. It was crowded and uncomfortable, but it was far better than the cold alleyways she'd slept in during her years traveling with Reen. Alleyways that I might have to get used to again, she thought. She had survived them before. She could do so again. She moved to her pallet, the muffled sounds of men laughing and drinking sounding from the other room. Vin knelt down, regarding her few possessions. If something did happen to the crew, she wouldn't be able to come back to the lair. Ever. But she couldn't take the bedroll with her now. It was far too obvious. That left only the small box that contained her personal effects. A pebble from each city she'd visited, the earring Reen said Vin's mother had given her, and a bit of obsidian the size of a large coin. It was chipped into an irregular pattern. Reen had carried it as some kind of good luck charm. It was the only thing he'd left behind when he'd snuck away from the crew half a year before. Abandoning her. Just like he'd always said he would, Vin told herself sternly. I never thought he'd actually go, and that's exactly why he had to leave. She gripped the bit of obsidian in her hand and pocketed the pebbles. The earring she put in her ear. It was a very simple thing. Little more than a stud, not even worth stealing, which was why she didn't fear leaving it in the back room. Still, Vin had rarely worn it, for fear that the ornamentation would make her look more feminine. She had no money, but Reen had taught her how to scavenge and beg. Both were difficult in the Final Empire, especially in Luthadel, but she would find a way if she had to. Vin left her box and bedroll, slipping back out into the common room. Maybe she was overreacting, perhaps nothing would happen to the crew. But if it did, well, if there was one thing Reen had taught her, it was how to protect her neck. Bringing Yulef was a good idea. He had contacts in Luthadel. If something happened to Cayman's crew, Yulef could probably get her and him jobs on. Vin froze just inside the main room. Yulef wasn't at the table where she had left him. Instead, he stood furtively near the front of the room, near the bar, near Cayman.
"What is this?"
Cayman stood, his face red as sunlight. He pushed his stool out of the way, then lurched toward her, half-drunk.
"Running away? Off to betray me to the Ministry, are you?"
Vin dashed toward the stairwell door, desperately scrambling around tables and past crew members. Cayman's hurled wooden stool hit her square in the back, throwing her to the ground. Pain flared between her shoulders. Several crew members cried out as the stool bounced off of her and thumped against the floorboards nearby. Vin lay in a daze. Then something within her, something she knew of but didn't understand, gave her strength. Her head stopped swimming, her pain becoming a focus. She climbed awkwardly to her feet. Cayman was there. He backhanded her even as she stood. Her head snapped to the side from the blow, twisting her neck so painfully that she barely felt herself hit the floor again. Cayman bent over, grabbing her by the front of her shirt and pulling her up, raising his fist. Vin didn't pause to think or to speak. There was only one thing to do. She used up all of her luck in a single furious effort, pushing against Cayman, calming his fury. Cayman teetered. For a moment his eyes softened. He lowered her slightly. Then the anger returned to his eyes. Hard. Terrifying.
"Damn wench," Cayman muttered, grabbing her by the shoulders and shaking her. "That backstabbing brother of yours never respected me, and you're the same. I was too easy on you both. Should have..."
Vin tried to twist free, but Cayman's grip was firm. She searched desperately for aid from the other crew members. However, she knew what she would find. Indifference. They turned away, their faces embarrassed, but not concerned. Yulef still stood near Cayman's table, looking down guiltily. In her mind, she thought she heard a voice whispering to her. Reen's voice.
"Fool. Ruthlessness. It's the most logical of emotions. You don't have any friends in the underworld. You'll never have any friends in the underworld."
She renewed her struggles, but Cayman hit her again, knocking her to the ground. The blow stunned her, and she gasped, breath knocked from her lungs.
"Just endure," she thought, mind muddled. "He won't kill me. He needs me."
Yet as she turned weakly, she saw Cayman looming above her in the collisionist room, drunken fury showing in his face. She knew this time would be different. It would be no simple beating. He thought that she intended to betray him to the Ministry. He wasn't in control. There was murder in his eyes.
"Please,"
Vin thought with desperation, reaching for her luck, trying to make it work. There was no response. Luck, such as it was, had failed her. Cayman bent down, muttering to himself as he grabbed her by the shoulder. He raised an arm, his meaty hand forming another fist, his muscles tensing, an angry bead of sweat slipping off his chin and hitting her on the cheek. A few feet away, the stairwell door shook, then burst open. Cayman paused, arm upraised as he glared toward the door, and whatever unfortunate crew member had chosen such an inopportune moment to return to the lair. Vin seized the distraction. Ignoring the newcomer, she tried to shake herself free from Cayman's grip, but she was too weak. Her face blazed from where he'd hit her, and she tasted blood on her lip. Her shoulder had been twisted awkwardly, and her side ached from where she'd fallen. She clawed at Cayman's hand, but she suddenly felt weak, her inner strength failing her just as her luck had. Her pains suddenly seemed greater, more daunting, more demanding. She turned toward the door desperately. She was close, painfully close. She had nearly escaped, just a little farther. Then she saw the man standing quietly in the stairwell doorway. He was unfamiliar to her. Tall and hawk-faced, he had light blonde hair, and wore a relaxed nobleman's suit, his cloak hanging free. He was perhaps in his mid-thirties. He wore no hat, nor did he carry a dueling cane. And he looked very, very angry.
"What is this?" Cayman demanded. "Who are you?"
How did he get by the scouts? Vin thought, struggling to get her wits back. Pain. She could deal with pain. The obligators. Did they send him? The newcomer looked down at Vin, and his expression softened slightly. Then he looked up at Cayman, and his eyes grew dark. Cayman's angry demands were cut off as he was thrown backward, as if he had been punched by a powerful force. His arm was ripped free from Vin's shoulder, and he toppled to the ground, causing the floorboards to shake. The room fell quiet. "Have to get away," Vin thought, forcing herself up to her knees. Cayman groaned in pain from a few feet away, and Vin crawled away from him, slipping beneath an unoccupied table. The lair had a hidden exit, a trap door beside the far back wall. If she could crawl to it. Suddenly, Vin felt an overwhelming peace. The emotion slammed into her like a sudden weight. Her emotions squished silent, as if crushed by a forceful hand. Her fear puffed out like an extinguished candle, and even her pain seemed unimportant. She slowed, wondering why she had been so worried. She stood up, pausing as she faced the trap door. She breathed heavily, still a little dazed. "Cayman just tried to kill me," the logical part of her mind warned. "And someone else is attacking the lair. I have to get away." However, her emotions didn't match the logic. She felt serene, unworried, and more than a little bit curious. Someone had just used luck on her. She recognized it somehow, even though she'd never felt it upon her before. She paused beside the table, one hand on the wood, then slowly turned around. The newcomer still stood in the stairwell doorway. He studied her with a critical eye, then smiled in a disarming sort of way. "What is going on?" The newcomer finally stepped into the room. The rest of Cayman's crew remained sitting at their tables. They looked surprised, but oddly unworried. "He's using luck on them all. But how can he do it to so many at once?" Vin had never been able to store up enough luck to do more than give the occasional brief push. As the newcomer entered the room, Vin could finally see that a second person stood in the stairwell behind him. This second man was less imposing. He was shorter, with a dark half-beard and close-cropped straight hair. He also wore a nobleman's suit, though his was less sharply tailored. On the other side of the room, Cayman groaned and sat up, holding his head. He glanced at the newcomers.
"Master Doxon, why, this is a surprise."
"Indeed," said the shorter man, Doxon. Vin frowned, realizing she sensed a slight familiarity to these men. She recognized them from somewhere. The Canton of Finance. They were sitting in the waiting room when Cayman and I left. Cayman climbed to his feet, studying the blonde newcomer. Cayman looked down at the man's hands, both of which were lined with strange overlapping scars.
"By the Lord Ruler," Cayman whispered. "The survivor of Hathsin."
Vin frowned. The title was unfamiliar to her. Should she know this man? Her wounds still throbbed, despite the peace she felt, and her head was dizzy. She leaned on the table for support, but did not sit. Whoever this newcomer was, Cayman obviously thought him important.
"Why, Master Kelsier," Cayman sputtered. "This is a rare honor."
The newcomer, Kelsier, shook his head. "You know, I'm not really interested in listening to you." Cayman let out an irk of pain as he was thrown backward again. Kelsier made no obvious gesture to perform the feat.
Yet Cayman collapsed to the ground as if shoved by some unseen force. Cayman fell quiet, and Kelsier scanned the room. "The rest of you know who I am?" Many of the crew members nodded. "Good. I've come to your lair because you, my friends, owe me a great debt." The room was silent, save for Cayman's groans. Finally, one of the crewmen spoke.
"We do, Master Kelsier?"
"Indeed you do. You see, Master Doxson and I just saved your lives. Your rather incompetent crew leader left the Ministry's Canton of Finance about an hour ago, returning directly to this safe house. He was followed by two Ministry scouts, one high-ranking Prelin, and a single steel Inquisitor." No one spoke.
"Oh, Lord,"
Vin thought. She'd been right. She just hadn't been fast enough. If there was an Inquisitor...
"I dealt with the Inquisitor," Kelsier said.
He paused, letting the implication hang in the air. What kind of person could so lightly claim to have dealt with an Inquisitor? Rumors said the creatures were immortal, that they could see a man's soul, and that they were unmatched warriors.
"I require payment for services rendered," Kelsier said.
Cayman didn't get up this time. He had fallen hard, and he was obviously disoriented. The room remained still. Finally, Mylev, the dark-skinned man who was Cayman's second, scooped up the coffer of Ministry boxings and dashed forward with it. He proffered it to Kelsier.
"The money Cayman got from the Ministry," Mylev explained. 3,000 boxings."
Mylev is so eager to please him, Vin thought. This is more than just luck. Either that or it's some sort of luck I've never been able to use. Kelsier paused, then accepted the coin chest.
"And you are..."
"Mylev, Master Kelsier."
"Well, crew leader Mylev, I will consider this payment satisfactory, assuming you do one other thing for me."
Mylev paused.
"What would that be?"
Kelsier nodded toward the near unconscious Cayman.
"Deal with him."
"Of course," Mylev said.
"I want him to live, Mylev," Kelsier said, holding up a finger. "But I don't want him to enjoy it."
Mylev nodded.
"We'll make him a beggar. The Lord Ruler disapproves of the profession. Cayman won't have an easy time of it here in Luthadel."
"And Mylev will dispose of him anyway as soon as he thinks this Kelsier isn't paying attention."
"Good," Kelsier said.
Then he opened the coin chest and began counting out some golden boxings.
"You're a resourceful man, Mylev. Quick on your feet and not as easily intimidated as the others."
"I've had dealings with Mistings before, Master Kelsier," Mylev said.
Kelsier nodded.
"Dox," he said, addressing his companion, "where were we going to have our meeting tonight?"
"I was thinking we should use Clubs's shop," said the second man.
"Hardly a neutral location," Kelsier said, "especially if he decides not to join us."
"True."
Kelsier looked to Mylev.
"I'm planning a job in this area. It would be useful to have the support of some locals."
He held out a pile of what looked like 100 boxings.
"We'll require use of your safe house for the evening. This can be arranged?"
"Of course,"
Mylev said, taking the coins eagerly.
"Good," Kelsier said. "Now get out."
"Out?"
Mylev asked hesitantly.
"Yes," Kelsier said. "Take your men, including your former leader, and leave. I want to have a private conversation with Mistress Vin."
The room grew silent again, and Vin knew she wasn't the only one wondering how Kelsier knew her name.
"Well, you heard him,"
Mylev snapped. He waved for a group of thugs to go grab Cayman, then he shooed the rest of the crew members up the stairs. Vin watched them go, growing apprehensive. This Kelsier was a powerful man, and instinct told her that powerful men were dangerous.
Did he know of her luck? Obviously. What other reason would he have for singling her out? How is this Kelsier going to try and use me, she thought, rubbing her arm where she'd hit the floor. By the way, my love, Kelsier said idly, when I say private, I mean that I don't want to be spied on by the four men watching us through the peek holes behind the far wall. Kindly take them up into the alley with you. Milov paled.
Of course, Master Kelsier.
Good. And in the alleyway you'll find the two dead ministry spies. Kindly dispose of the corpses for us. Milov nodded, turning. And Milov, Kelsier added. Milov turned back again. See that none of your men betray us, Kelsier said quietly. And Vin felt it again, a renewed pressure on her emotions. This crew already has the eye of the Steel Ministry. Do not make an enemy of me as well. Milov nodded sharply, then disappeared into the stairwell, pulling the door closed behind him. A few moments later, Vin heard footsteps from the peak room. Then all was still. She was alone with a man who was, for some reason, so singularly impressive that he could intimidate an entire room full of cutthroats and thieves. She eyed the bolt door. Kelsier was watching her. What would he do if she ran? He claims to have killed an inquisitor, Vin thought. And he used luck. I have to stay if just long enough to find out what he knows. Kelsier's smile deepened. Then finally he laughed.
That was far too much fun, Dox.
The other man, the one Cayman had called Doxon, snorted and walked toward the front of the room. Vin tensed, but he didn't move toward her, instead strolling to the bar.
You were insufferable enough before, Kel, Doxon said. I don't know how I'm going to handle this new reputation of yours. At least I'm not sure how I'm going to handle it and maintain a straight face.
You're jealous.
Yes, that's it, Doxon said. I'm terribly jealous of your ability to intimidate petty criminals. If it's of any note to you, I think you were too harsh on Cayman.
Kelsier walked over and took a seat at one of the room's tables. His mirth darkened slightly as he spoke. You saw what he was doing to the girl?
Actually, I didn't, Doxon said dryly, rummaging through the bar's stores. Someone was blocking the doorway.
Kelsier shrugged.
Look at her, Dox. The poor thing's been beaten nearly senseless. I don't feel any sympathy for the man.
Vin remained where she was, keeping watch on both men. As the tension of the moment grew weaker, her wounds began to throb. The blow between her shoulder blades, that would be a large bruise, and the slap to her face burned as well. She was still a little dizzy. Kelsier was watching her. Vin clenched her teeth. Pain. She could deal with pain.
You need anything, child? Doxon asked. A wet handkerchief for that face, perhaps?
She didn't respond, instead remaining focused on Kelsier.
Come on. Tell me what you want with me. Make your play.
Doxon finally shrugged, then ducked beneath the bar for a moment. He eventually came up with a couple of bottles.
Anything good?
Kelsier asked, turning.
What do you think? Doxon asked. Even among thieves, Cayman isn't exactly known for his refinement. I have socks worth more than this wine.
Kelsier sighed.
Give me a cup anyway.
Then he glanced back at Vin.
You want anything?
Vin didn't respond. Kelsier smiled.
Don't worry. We're far less frightening than your friends think.
I don't think they were her friends, Kel, Doxon said from behind the bar.
Good point, Kelsier said. Regardless, child, you don't have anything to fear from us, other than Dox's breath.
Doxon rolled his eyes.
Or Kel's jokes.
Vin stood quietly. She could act weak, the way she had with Cayman, but instincts told her that these men wouldn't respond well to that tactic. So she remained where she was, assessing the situation. The calmness fell upon her again. It encouraged her to be at ease, to be trusting, to simply do as the men were suggesting.
No.
She stayed where she was. Kelsier raised an eyebrow.
That's unexpected.
What?
Doxson asked as he poured a cup of wine.
Nothing, Kelsier said, studying Vin.
You want a drink or not, lass? Doxson asked.
Vin said nothing. All her life, as long as she could remember, she'd had her luck. It made her strong, and it gave her an edge over other thieves. It was probably why she was still alive. Yet all that time she'd never really known what it was or why she could use it. Logic and instinct now told her the same thing, that she needed to find out what this man knew. However he intended to use her, whatever his plans, she needed to endure them. She had to find out how he'd grown so powerful.
Ale,
she finally said.
Ale? Kelsier asked. That's it?
Vin nodded, watching him carefully.
I like it.
Kelsier rubbed his chin.
We'll have to work on that, he said. Anyway, have a seat.
Hesitant, Vin walked over and sat down opposite Kelsier at the small table. Her wounds throbbed, but she couldn't afford to show weakness. Weakness killed. She had to pretend to ignore the pain. At least, sitting as she was, her head cleared. Doxson joined them a moment later, giving Kelsier a glass of wine, and Vin her mug of ale. She didn't take a drink.
Who are you?
She asked in a quiet voice. Kelsier raised an eyebrow.
You're a blunt one, eh?
Vin didn't reply. Kelsier sighed.
So much for my intriguing air of mystery.
Doxson snorted quietly. Kelsier smiled.
My name is Kelsier. I'm what you might call a crew leader, but I run a crew that isn't like any you've probably known. Men like Kamen, along with his crew, like to think of themselves as predators, feeding off the nobility and the various organizations of the Ministry.
Vin shook her head.
Not predators, scavengers.
One would have thought, perhaps, that so close to the Lord Ruler, such things as thieving crews would not be able to exist. Yet Rhen had shown her that the opposite was true. Powerful, rich nobility congregated around the Lord Ruler, and where power and riches existed, so did corruption, especially since the Lord Ruler tended to police his nobility far less than he did the Ska. It had to do, apparently, with his fondness for their ancestors. Either way, thieving crews like Kamen's were the rats who fed on the city's corruption. And like rats, they were impossible to entirely exterminate, especially in a city with the population of Luthadel.
Scavengers, Kelsier said, smiling. Apparently he did that a lot. That's an appropriate description, Vin.
Well, Dox and I,
we're scavengers too. We're just a higher quality of scavenger. We're more well-bred, you might say, or perhaps just more ambitious.
She frowned.
You're noblemen?
Lord, no, Doxson said.
Or at least, Kelsier said, not full-blooded ones.
Half-breeds aren't supposed to exist, Vin said carefully. The Ministry hunts them.
Kelsier raised an eyebrow.
Half-breeds like you?
Vin felt a shock.
How?
Even the Steel Ministry isn't infallible, Vin, Kelsier said. If they can miss you, then they can miss others.
Vin paused thoughtfully.
Mylev, he called you Mistings. Those are some kind of allomancer, right?
Doxson glanced at Kelsier.
She's observant,
the shorter man said with an appreciative nod.
Indeed, Kelsier agreed. The man did call us Mistings, Vin, though the appellation was a bit hasty since neither Dox nor I are technically Mistings. We do, however, associate with them quite a bit.
Vin sat quietly for a moment, sitting beneath the scrutiny of the two men. Allomancy, the mystical power held by the nobility granted to them by the Lord Ruler some 1,000 years before as a reward for their loyalty. It was basic ministry doctrine. Even a ska like Vin knew that much. The nobility had allomancy and privilege because of their ancestors. The ska were punished for the same reason. The truth was, however, that she didn't really know what allomancy was. It had something to do with fighting, she'd always assumed. One misting, as they were called, was said to be dangerous enough to kill an entire thieving team. Yet the ska she knew spoke of the power in whispered, uncertain tones. Before this moment, she'd never even paused to consider the possibility that it might simply be the same thing as her luck. "Tell me, Vin," Kelsier said, leaning forward with interest. "Do you realize what you did to that obligator in the Canton of Finance?"
"I used my luck," Vin said quietly. "I use it to make people less angry."
"Or less suspicious," Kelsier said. "Easier to scam." Vin nodded. Kelsier held up a finger. "There are a lot of things you're going to have to learn. Techniques, rules, and exercises. One lesson, however, cannot wait. Never use emotional allomancy on an obligator. They're all trained to recognize when their passions are being manipulated. Even the high nobility are forbidden from pulling or pushing the emotions of an obligator. You are what caused that obligator to send for an inquisitor."
"Pray the creature never catches your trail again, lass," Doxson said quietly, sipping his wine.
Vin paled.
"You didn't kill the inquisitor?"
Kelsier shook his head.
"I just distracted him for a bit, which was quite dangerous enough, I might add. Don't worry, many of the rumors about them aren't true. Now that he's lost your trail, he won't be able to find you again."
"Most likely," Doxson said.
Vin glanced at the shorter man apprehensively.
"Most likely," Kelsier agreed. "There are a lot of things we don't know about the Inquisitors. They don't seem to follow the normal rules. Those spikes through their eyes, for instance, should kill them. Nothing I've learned about allomancy has ever provided an explanation for how those creatures keep living. If it were only a regular misting seeker on your trail, we wouldn't need to worry. An Inquisitor? Well, you'll want to keep your eyes open. Of course, you already seem pretty good at that."
Vin sat uncomfortably for a moment. Eventually, Kelsier nodded to her mug of ale.
"You aren't drinking."
"You might have slipped something in it," Vin said.
"Oh, there was no need for me to sneak something into your drink," Kelsier said with a smile, pulling an object out of his suit coat pocket. "After all, you're going to drink this vial of mysterious liquid quite willingly."
He set a small glass vial on the tabletop. Vin frowned, regarding the liquid within. There was a dark residue at its bottom.
"What is it?"
she asked.
"If I told you, it wouldn't be mysterious," Kelsier said with a smile.
Doxson rolled his eyes.
"The vial is filled with an alcohol solution and some flecks of metal, Vin."
"Metal?"
she asked with a frown.
"Two of the 8 basic allomantic metals," Kelsier said. "We need to do some tests."
Vin eyed the vial. Kelsier shrugged.
"You'll have to drink it if you want to know any more about this luck of yours."
"You drink half first," Vin said.
Kelsier raised an eyebrow.
"A bit on the paranoid side, I see."
Vin didn't respond. Finally, he sighed, picking up the vial and pulling off the plug.
"Shake it up first," Vin said, "so you get some of the sediment."
Kelsier rolled his eyes, but did as requested, shaking the vial, then downing half of its contents. He set it back on the table with a click. Vin frowned. Then she eyed Kelsier, who smiled. He knew that he had her. He had shown off his power, had tempted her with it.
"The only reason to be subservient to those with power
is so that you can learn to someday take what they have.
Rin's words. Vin reached out and took the vial, then she downed its contents. She sat, waiting for some magical transformation or surge of power, or even signs of poison. She felt nothing.
How anticlimactic.
She frowned, leaning back in her chair. Out of curiosity, she felt at her luck, and felt her eyes widen in shock. It was there like a massive golden hoard, a storage of power so incredible that it stretched her understanding. Always before, she had needed to be a scrimp with her luck, holding it in reserve, using up morsels sparingly. Now she felt like a starving woman invited to a high nobleman's feast. She sat, stunned, regarding the enormous wealth within her.
"So," Kelsier said with a prodding voice, "try it. Soothe me."
Vin reached out, tentatively touching her newfound mass of luck. She took a bit and directed it at Kelsier.
"Good."
Kelsier leaned forward eagerly. "But we already knew you could do that. Now the real test, Vin. Can you go the other way? You can dampen my emotions, but can you inflame them, too?" Vin frowned. She'd never used her luck in such a way. She hadn't even realized that she could. Why was he so eager? Suspicious, Vin reached for her source of luck. As she did so, she noticed something interesting. What she had first interpreted as one massive source of power was actually two different sources of power. There were different types of luck.
8. He'd said there were 8 of them. But what do the others do?
Kelsier was still waiting. Vin reached to the second, unfamiliar source of luck, doing as she'd done before and directing it at him. Kelsier's smile deepened and he sat back, glancing at Doxson.
"That's it, then. She did it."
Doxson shook his head.
"To be honest, Kel, I'm not sure what to think. Having one of you around was unsettling enough. 2, though."
Vin regarded them with narrowed, dubious eyes.
"2 what?"
"Even among the nobility, Vin, allomancy is modestly rare," Kelsier said. "True, it's a hereditary skill, with most of its powerful lines among the high nobility. However, breeding alone doesn't guarantee allomantic strength. Many high noblemen only have access to a single allomantic skill. People like that, those who can only perform allomancy in one of its 8 basic aspects, are called mistings. Sometimes these abilities appear in Ska, but only if that Ska has noble blood in his or her near ancestry. You can usually find one misting in, about 10,000 mixed-breed Ska. The better and closer the noble ancestry, the more likely the Ska is to be a misting."
"Who are your parents, Vin?" Doxson asked. "Do you remember them?" "I was raised by my half-brother Rin," Vin said quietly, uncomfortable.
These were not things she discussed with others.
"Did he speak of your mother and father?" Doxson asked. "Occasionally," she admitted. "Rin said that our mother was a whore. Not out of choice, but the underworld..."
She trailed off. Her mother had tried to kill her once when she was very young. She vaguely remembered the event. Rin had saved her.
"What about your father, Vin?" Doxson asked.
Vin looked up.
"He is a high prelin in the Steel Ministry."
Kelsier whistled softly.
"Now that's a slightly ironic breach of duty."
Vin looked down at the table. Finally, she reached over and took a healthy pull on her mug of ale. Kelsier smiled.
"Most ranking obligators in the ministry are high noblemen. Your father gave you a rare gift in that blood of yours."
"So, I'm one of these mistings you mentioned?"
Kelsier shook his head. Actually, no. You see, this is what made you so interesting to us, Vin. Mistings only have access to one allomantic skill. You just proved you have two. And if you have access to at least two of the eight, then you have access to the rest as well. That's the way it works. If you're an allomancer, you either get one skill or you get them all. Kelsier leaned forward. You, Vin, are what is generally called a mistborn. Even among the nobility, they're incredibly rare. Amongst Ska? Well, let's just say I've only met one other Ska mistborn in my entire life. Somehow the room seemed to grow more quiet, more still. Vin stared at her mug with distracted, uncomfortable eyes. Mistborn. She'd heard the stories, of course. The legends. Kelsier and Doxson sat quietly, letting her think. Eventually, she spoke.
So what does this all mean?
Kelsier smiled.
It means that you, Vin, are a very special person. You have a power that most high noblemen envy. It is a power that, had you been born an aristocrat, would have made you one of the most deadly and influential people in all of the Final Empire.
Kelsier leaned forward again.
But you weren't born an aristocrat. You're not noble, Vin. You don't have to play by their rules. And that makes you even more powerful.
Apparently, the next stage of my quest will take us up into the highlands of Terrace. This is said to be a cold, unforgiving place, a land where the mountains themselves are made of ice. Our normal attendants will not do for such a trip. We should probably hire some Terrace packmen to carry our gear.
4.
You heard what he said. He's planning a job.
Ulip's eyes shone with excitement.
I wonder which of the great houses he's going to strike.
It'll be one of the most powerful ones,
said Distin, one of Cayman's head point men. He was missing a hand, but his eyes and ears were among the keenest in the crew.
Kelsier never bothers himself with small-time jobs.
Vin sat quietly, her mug of ale, the same one Kelsier had given her, still sitting mostly full on the tabletop. Her table was crowded with people. Kelsier had let the thieves return to their home for a bit before his meeting began. Vin, however, would have preferred to remain by herself. Life with Reen had accustomed her to loneliness. If you let someone get too close, it would just give them better opportunities to betray you. Even after Reen's disappearance, Vin had kept to herself. She hadn't been willing to leave. However, she also hadn't felt the need to become familiar with the other crew members. They had, in turn, been perfectly willing to let her alone. Vin's position had been precarious, and associating with her could have tainted them by association. Only Yulef had made any moves to befriend her.
If you let someone get close to you, it will only hurt you more when they betray you,
Reen seemed to whisper in her mind. Had Yulef even really been her friend? He'd certainly sold her out quickly enough. In addition, the crew members had taken Vin's beating and sudden rescue in stride, never mentioning their betrayal or refusal to help her. They'd only done what was expected.
A survivor hasn't bothered himself with any jobs lately, said Harmon, an older, scraggly bearded burglar. He's barely been seen in Lúthadel a handful of times during the last few years. In fact, he hasn't pulled any jobs since.
This is the first one? Yulef asked eagerly. The first since he escaped the pits? Then it's bound to be something spectacular.
Did he say anything about it, Vin? Distin asked. Vin?
He waved a stumpy arm in her direction, catching her attention.
What?
She asked, looking up. She had cleaned herself slightly since her beating at Cayman's hand, finally accepting a handkerchief from Doxson to wipe the blood from her face. There was little she could do about the bruises, however. Those still throbbed. Hopefully nothing was broken.
Kelsier, Diston repeated. Did he say anything about the job he's planning?
Vin shook her head. She glanced down at the bloodied handkerchief. Kelsier and Doxson had left a short time ago, promising to return after she'd had some time to think about the things they had told her. There was an implication in their words, however. An offer. Whatever job they were planning, she was invited to participate.
"Why'd he pick you to be his twixt anyway, Vin?"
Yulaf asked.
"Did he say anything about that?"
That's what the crew assumed, that Kelsier had chosen her to be his contact with Kamen's, Mylev's, crew. There were two sides to the Luthadel Underground. There were the regular crews, like Kamen's, then there were the special ones. Groups composed of the extremely skillful, the extremely foolhardy, or the extremely talented. Allomancers. The two sides of the underworld didn't mix. Regular thieves left their betters alone. However, occasionally one of these misting crews hired a regular team to do some of its more mundane work, and they would choose a twixt, a go-between, to work with both crews. Hence Yulaf's assumption about Vin. Mylev's crew members noticed her unresponsiveness and turned to another topic. Mistings. They spoke of Allomancy with uncertain, whispered tones, and she listened, uncomfortable. How could she be associated with something they held in such awe? Her luck, her Allomancy, was something small, something she used to survive, but something really quite unimportant. But such power, she thought, looking in at her luck reserve.
What's Kelsier been doing these last few years, I wonder? Yulaf asked.
He had seemed a bit uncomfortable around her at the beginning of the conversation, but that had passed quickly. He'd betrayed her, but this was the underworld. No friends.
It didn't seem that way between Kelsier and Doxson. They appeared to trust each other.
A front? Or were they simply one of those rare teams that actually didn't worry about each other's betrayal? The most unsettling thing about Kelsier and Doxson had been their openness with her. They seemed willing to trust, even accept Vin, after a relatively short time. It couldn't be genuine. No one could survive in the underworld following such tactics. Still, their friendliness was disconcerting.
2 years, said Hrud, a flat-faced, quiet thug. He must have spent the entire time planning for this job.
It must be some job indeed, Yulaf said.
Tell me about him, Vin said quietly.
Kelsier?
Diston asked. Vin nodded.
They didn't talk about Kelsier down south?
Vin shook her head.
He was the best crew leader in Luthadel,
Yulaf explained.
A legend, even among the Mistings. He robbed some of the wealthiest great houses in the city.
And? Vin asked.
Someone betrayed him, Harmon said in a quiet voice.
Of course, Vin thought.
The Lord Ruler himself caught Kelsier, Yulaf said. Sent Kelsier and his wife to the pits of Hathsin. But he escaped. He escaped from the pits, Vin. He's the only one who ever has.
And the wife? Vin asked.
Yulaf glanced at Harmon, who shook his head.
She didn't make it. So he's lost someone, too. How can he laugh so much, so honestly?
That's where he got those scars, you know.